The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to America's Web Radio. This is Ron Bachman, and you're listening to Healthcare Insight. Today, I want to do a very special presentation. It is the holiday season, so Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy New Year's, Happy whatever you're celebrating during this wonderful period of time. And today, I want to look into some of the history of Christmas, some of the history of Santa Claus, of St. Nicholas, of Christmas trees, of all sorts of issues that surround the holiday period of time. I think that'll be interesting. Some of the things you may know, some of the things you may not know that may be able to fill in some of the gaps, the historical perspective, so that you know when you're singing a song where maybe the origin of it came from. Maybe you said words and you really didn't understand what the background was on all that. So stay tuned. I want to give a little bit of this history lesson on the season that we're in. And I want to start with looking at Santa Claus or St. Nicholas, as many of you know. But where did the St. Nicholas come from? Who was St. Nicholas? And how did that begin the whole idea of Santa Claus? And how did it move from St. Nicholas to what we currently call today Santa Claus? And is that the same name that's used in other countries, and why would it be different? So let's start with St. Nicholas and a little bit of the background. So in that regard, what I want to do today is kind of bring together a number of experts on these history pieces of Christmas and the holiday season. And I want you to hear this. You can find them on YouTube if you want, but most people don't really see, or there haven't been many views on YouTube, but it's important stuff that I wanted to bring forward. So let's have some expert voices weigh in on this whole idea of St. Nicholas.
Nicholas of Bari was born in the 4th century in the town of Myra, located in Asia Minor. This is now modern-day Turkey. His parents were wealthy Christians who had trouble conceiving a child for many years. They prayed to God every day to have a child of their very own, and as soon as they finally conceived and gave birth to a son, they saw it as truly a miracle. Sadly, Nicholas's parents, they would die of an epidemic that had spread throughout the city of Myra, leaving him to become a young orphan. He was raised by his uncle, who was the Bishop of Myra, who had never had children of his own. He was very proud of his nephew, especially when he grew up to be a very well-behaved boy. His uncle apparently announced to everyone in the church that he had a vision that his nephew would grow up to bring joy to many people. When Nicholas grew up, his uncle's prophecy actually did come true. He was always kind to others and went out of his way to help people. As an orphan, Nicholas had a special place in his heart for children, and he would often help them make handmade toys to play with. Even though he was from a wealthy family, he still had a lot of sympathy for the poor, and he wanted to do whatever he could to help.
So what we know from this history, and it is factual history, it's not made up story, is that there actually was an initial Nicholas that gave toys and helped other people, helped especially children with gifts. And so that was the beginning of our whole Christmas period of time. So, you know, this is sort of ground zero, if you will, of the idea of somebody being so recognized for their goodwill towards others during the holiday season or during other parts of the season that ultimately became part of the Christmas giving traditions that we have. Well, my question then would be, is there a particular example in history as to how this became so recognized? There must have been some big event, big activity, not just making little toys for children, but there must have been something that sparked this whole historical view and knowledge of somebody who's out doing good that might have otherwise been lost in history. So is there something that really a story behind this that stands out that created this beginning of a Santa Claus?
There was a man in the town who had three beautiful daughters, but he was so poor he could not pay for a dowry. This meant that his daughters could not get married, and they would have to be sold into slavery because the father could not afford to support them. Nicholas wanted to help, but he did not want to hurt the father's pride by offering a donation face to face. So he dropped a bag of gold down the chimney, which landed in their stockings that were hanging up to dry. The father and his daughters, they jumped for joy, believing that God had finally answered their prayers. He was finally able to pay for the dowry, and his oldest daughter went on to get married. Nicholas came back to do this again for the two younger daughters, which is when he was caught in the act. Everyone knew this gold wasn't just appearing out of thin air, and people began to whisper around town about young Nicholas and his kind heart and his generosity.
Well, the story sounds great, and it does sound very realistic until we get the idea of dropping something down a chimney and into some stockings. That may be a little bit far-fetched and may be a little exaggeration, but I guess we can get the point of somebody giving during a holiday period of time, giving out of the goodness of their heart. So let's find out a little bit more about Nicholas and what he ultimately did with the rest of his life.
Nicholas was a very simple person who didn't need a lot to be happy, and the money didn't mean much to him. But he knew that his donations could be life-changing for other families in Myra. He decided to continue paying attention to people who needed the most help in the city, and he would always anonymously give away his inheritance to other people. After this story spread around town, people began to leave their stockings and shoes by the fireplace in hopes that they would receive gold from Nicholas as well. Soon after this, people throughout the city of Myra were receiving anonymous presents that would mysteriously appear in their homes. This sparked a spirit of giving, and neighbors were now helping out one another in their time of need without fear of hurting their pride. Any time an anonymous gift would show up, they decided to thank Nicholas, even if he wasn't the one to actually deliver every single present.
Notice that they started attributing all gifts that were being given, even by others, to a single person or a single ideal in Nicholas. So let's find out a little bit more about him and how this sort of initial giving process sort of grew into a much broader myth that may have developed over the centuries into something even more of what we would recognize today. So tell us a little bit more about the mythology around and some additional activities that St. Nicholas was engaged in during his lifetime.
People began a rumor that since this man seemed to be able to be in many places at once, he was more than just a devout Christian man. They believed that he had been blessed with magical powers. Now he truly did begin to travel across Turkey, and he reached a point where he had given away all of his earthly possessions, which was totally fine with him. He, at that point, devoted his life to becoming a monk. We know with absolute certainty that Nicholas truly was a real person, because he grew up to take over his uncle's position as the next Bishop of Myra.
So now we can see how Nicholas moved from being a man to the myth to being the Bishop of Myra, which gave him a voice in the Catholic religion and among the Catholic priests. So how did it move to the next level?
He was seen as such a holy man that he was later canonized as St. Nicholas, the patron saint of children and, surprisingly, sailors. That's right, St. Nick loved to travel even back then. He sailed along the coasts of Asia Minor and dreamed of seeing the entire planet.
So many times you have a good neighbor, you have somebody of a high-profile nature in the church or in politics or in business that does good, and the memories of those people don't last all that long, maybe a generation or two, but how did this work with Nicholas, St. Nicholas at this point, being canonized by the Roman Catholic Church? Tell us a little bit about how this myth went on and how long it went on for after the recognition of his good deeds.
The fantastical stories of St. Nicholas lasted for longer than just one lifetime. His story continued to go on for another 1,000 years. It would seem that the magic behind his generosity was so inspiring and powerful, it was enough to keep him alive in the hearts of mankind for generations to come.
So tell us a little bit about how this magic, this inspiration of St. Nicholas began to spread around the world, and what parts of the world were most immediately affected in this growth of St. Nicholas's popularity.
From the 4th to the 16th centuries, Nicholas became one of the most popular Catholic saints. People continued to pray to him, wishing for his help in their time of need. Stories of St. Nick's magic and generosity began to spread throughout the rest of the world. In the Netherlands, Belgium, and Switzerland, children began to leave their shoes outside on St. Nicholas Day so that the jolly Sinterklaas could leave them presents. Sure enough, small toys and candy were left for them when they awoke in the morning.
I want our listeners to pick up on two things in this last segment, commenting about St. Nicholas, that first of all, there became a St. Nicholas Day. And the name for the person or the entity that was bringing these gifts, these toys, candies, whatever, is Sinterklaas. That was sort of the Northern European name that was given to the entity that was bringing the stuff on St. Nicholas Day. And we'll see where Sinterklaas, as a Dutch description, was ultimately carried over to the United States and morphed into Santa Claus. Now, let's go to the next level of history, because all this is that we're talking about, St. Nicholas, is a Catholic bishop within the Roman Catholic Church being recognized as a saint that would help little children. What happened after the Reformation and Martin Luther's changing from the Catholic Church into Protestantism throughout Europe? What happened at that point?
After the Protestant Reformation, Martin Luther wanted to do away with the stories of Catholic saints, so he said that these presents were actually coming from the baby Jesus, or Christkindl. People were confused, of course, because they knew that the real gift giver was the jolly old St. Nick delivering the presents to these children. So Christkindl was misunderstood to be Kris Kringle, and the nickname stuck.
So now we're getting a real good history and understanding, hopefully, as we move into this holiday season, listeners out there, that we've identified how St. Nicholas became to be used as a term for the holidays, how Santa Claus, coming from Sinterklaas, was done. And now we can see where the Kris Kringle name also is used very popularly in the United States. So let's see how this converted. Let's bring history more up to speed in the current times. And how did this happen when we moved from Catholicism to Protestantism, and then we moved to the United States and the history there of Santa Claus and the holiday time?
After the Revolutionary War, there was a movement to reject many of the English ways and start new traditions that were uniquely American. An author by the name of Washington Irving had already made a name for himself by writing and publishing American folk tales that had been told by word of mouth, like Rip Van Winkle and the spooky legend of Sleepy Hollow. So when he heard about the Dutch story of Sinterklaas, he decided to officially give him the properly American-sounding name Santa Claus. This is how St. Nick officially became a part of the American Christmas tradition.
Well, I hope our listeners out there are getting a good history lesson on the holiday time and the whole spirit of Santa Claus, so that when you're sitting around your Christmas dinner or watching the football games over the weekend, that you're able to impress your children on knowing a little bit more of the history, or at least the other adults, about the whole history of Santa Claus and the various names that are being used. Let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. And I want to wrap up the whole idea of Santa Claus and move on to some of the other customs of the holiday period of time.
What do doctors talk about in doctors' lounges around the country? Find out on the Doctor's Lounge Show every Thursday at 8 a.m. on America's Web Radio.
Veteran-owned, America's Web Radio would like to thank all of our incredible patrons. We wouldn't be able to do this without you. If you are not already a patron, you can help us continue to produce some of the most informative and entertaining shows on the internet by becoming a patron. Patrons of America's Web Radio are the first to receive information about new shows and links to the latest podcast episodes. Join now and receive a free gift while supplies last. For more information and to join our family, please visit www.patreon.com/americaswebradio. If you have questions, contact us at gm@americaswebradio.com. And as always, thank you for listening.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio. Today, during this holiday season, we are focusing on a little bit of the history and the comparison of the myth and the man and the reality of what happens during the holiday period of time and the things that we sort of just take for granted and our children just take for granted, Christmas and Santa Claus and reindeer and gifts and all that sort of stuff that goes on in the pageantry around the holidays. Trying to understand a little bit more about where it all comes from, and is there a reality to it? Is there a real Santa Claus history that is important for us to know as we celebrate this time of year? Of course, the real celebration is around the birth of the Christ child. But surrounding that and that attitude of giving and loving your neighbor and focusing on children, all that is part of the holiday spirit and the holiday time that where we recognize the birth of Jesus Christ. But let's go back a little bit more to the actual history that creates this wonderful environment that we all live in during this holiday season, which many times in many areas, the weather is not so great. It's overcast. We don't have as many sunny skies. So having a bright and fun period of time really enlightens the entire time of year that might otherwise not be so happy. And so it is a great time to celebrate family, to celebrate children, especially if there are young children around in your family. That's sort of what really makes the holiday. So let's go back a little bit to how all this started. We talked in the last segment about how some of the original origins of Nicholas becoming Saint Nicholas and the spreading of the word and of what he did and the generosity and the givingness and the focus on children and how all that occurred. And then how even after his death, it spread that myth around the rest of the world that created a whole different idea of a Santa Claus in Amsterdam area, northern Europe, that then got transported over to the United States and the Santa Claus. And we've been talking about how Washington Irving, a writer of many of the American stories back then, really was involved in trying to create this whole idea of Santa Claus. And then other writers sort of picked up on that. So let's go to that point in time where other writers, very important writers to what you may be doing and reading to your children on this Christmas Eve, what you may have not known about where that came from and how that fed into the whole idea of Christmas and Santa Claus. So tell us about the other writers that expanded on this whole idea of Santa Claus.
As the years went on, more and more writers would elaborate with additional details about Santa Claus. In December of 1823, a writer named Clement Clark Moore was walking through the snow on his way home. Under his arm, he had a Christmas turkey for his family, and looking around at the beautiful scene, he was suddenly inspired to write a poem titled A Visit from St. Nicholas. But you probably know that as The Night Before Christmas.
Now you've really gotten to some of the really practical history of what we do. I certainly have read to my children that poem. But just to remind everybody in the audience which poem we are talking about, would you give us the first few lines that most of us would readily recognize?
"'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in the hopes that St. Nicholas would soon be there."
Well, thank you for making that few lines of the beginning reading for all of us. It certainly brings back memories to me. And it does paint the whole picture of a Santa Claus, what he looks like, what he does, and how he gets around the world and how he does presents. Can you give a little bit more explanation for our audience about how you perceive the impact of that particular poem on the whole background, history, and mythology of Christmas?
"This became an incredibly popular poem. It so perfectly captured the Christmas spirit that in just a few years, nearly every American would know it by heart. Instead of thinking of his time living in Turkey as a 4th century saint, people now imagine Santa Claus to be a chubby, jolly old man who climbed through the chimney to place presents in stockings and leave them wrapped up under the Christmas tree."
That poem was so powerful, it created this image and it affected our vision of Santa Claus and Christmas and the whole activity of gift giving and how they got here, the myth of Santa Claus and the reality of the joy that that idea can bring. There are other ways that have occurred to expand on that. How did the, for example, how did the idea of reindeer drawing his sleigh around the world as he presented gifts to children? How did that start? There must have been another writer involved to create that part of the Santa Claus story.
In 1821, an anonymous author wrote and illustrated a story called Old Santa Claus with Much Delight. For the first time, the public learned that Santa had upgraded his ride from a rickety old wagon and a boat to a proper sled pulled by a single reindeer.
So that's the origin of how Santa Claus got to be pulled around in a sleigh by, in your case, you described it as a single reindeer. What about one of the other issues of Santa Claus and Mrs. Claus? Because originally St. Nicholas was not married, and so that idea of Santa Claus or Santa Claus when it converted over to the United States beginnings, he was not married. There was no Mrs. Claus. So how did Mrs. Claus, it must have been another writer that expanded on this whole idea that ingrained itself into the American public's consciousness.
In 1889, poet Catherine Lee Bates introduced the world to Mrs. Claus, and we got to know a little bit more about St. Nick's personal life. We still don't know exactly when they got married, but this couple have what is probably the longest-lasting marriage in history. We also don't know if they ever had any children together.
So as the story of Santa Claus sort of gets rounded out, we have a more visual picture of Santa Claus. A rotund individual goes down chimneys, presents gifts. We know that he's now being pulled on a sleigh with at least one reindeer that will ultimately be expanded into at least 8, if not 10 reindeer through other writers. We've learned about that he has a wife, Mrs. Claus. Tell us about the origins and where it started that he would be located in the North Pole with elves working for him to create all these toys and gifts. Where did that start and where did that come from?
As the years went on, the public learned more about Santa's progress in his mission to bring joy to the world. We learned that he moved his new secret hideout to the North Pole and he hired a team of elves to run his workshop. We were introduced to his extended fleet of 8 magic reindeer, and in 1939 he added the newest member of the team, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
So Rudolph really didn't come in, like you said, until 1939. So this history of developing the Santa Claus and all of the activities and all of the surrounding celebration of Christmas with Santa Claus and how his elves existed, how he did it North Pole, Mrs. Claus, the reindeer, all that stuff was developed by inventive writers that caught the imagination and the attention of the American public to create the entire Christmas experience that we now enjoy. But I also now understand that Christmas is a national holiday. While many people think there ought to be a separation of the government and religion, in fact, Christmas is a recognized national holiday. Tell us about that and when that occurred. When did that start and what president implemented that?
In 1891, even the president of the United States was promoting Santa Claus. Benjamin Harrison told the press, "We shall have an old-fashioned Christmas tree for the grandchildren upstairs, and I shall be their Santa Claus myself. Let me hope that my example will be followed by every family in the land."
Well, that's interesting. I hope our audience is picking up on all this building up of the whole Santa Claus storyline through great writers and people who have impacted the consciousness of the American public over time. And now that we sort of have this image of workshops up in the North Pole and elves running around doing all the real work, Santa is not making all the toys. He is ultimately giving out the toys on Christmas. But tell us about this change in image with Santa sort of being overseer of the elf.
Moving into the 20th century, Santa Claus was always hip to the modern times. During the Industrial Revolution, he was able to improve his operations with his elf employees working the assembly lines in his workshop at the North Pole. Santa became more like the CEO of his toy empire, making sure the operation ran as smoothly as possible. Now that he wasn't running his workshop alone, he was finally able to make the time to begin making public appearances.
So now you're telling our audience that he's become so popular and this whole idea of the image of Santa and how all this works, he's now going to become more public. Tell us about some of the early public experiences and appearances that he had to sort of further ingrain him into the American ideal of what Santa Claus and Christmas giving is all about.
In 1924, he decided to be a part of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in New York City. He received such a warm welcome from his adoring fans that he decided to reappear every single year ever since.
Let's move forward in time with this history now that we have Santa becoming more public in Macy's Christmas Day Parade. So as people out there watching it this year, they'll understand that was one of the earliest public exposures of Santa as it became an accepted figure for representing the Christmas time and the gift giving that was occurring. Tell us a little bit more about what happened, say, even in the 1980s and beyond, so we can bring it up more to actual modern day. What was occurring during the 1980 period of time that created a new shift in this history?
The 1980s brought the boom of the shopping mall in the United States, and this began the tradition of Santa Claus taking personal requests from boys and girls.
Well, I will have to add a little bit to what you've just said, because you know, being older like I am, I've lived through much of the history, and quite honestly, I can remember in the 1960s traveling to New York, where, like you said, a lot of the exposure really started with Santa, but I remember sitting down in probably a Macy's store on Santa's lap and asking him for presents. So maybe it really started before the 1980s, but I get your point that there were malls and there were stores that were promoting the idea of sitting down and young children talking to Santa Claus. Let's move to sort of the current scientific, since we're sort of in that period of time of technology and science in the 21st century. Let's have a little fun and tell us about what has happened with the idea of Santa Claus being able to go around the world and deliver all these toys in such a short period of time. How is that working in the modern day of GPSs and internet and kids really beginning to understand technology a little bit more?
Moving into the 21st century, modern technology has helped us truly break down the science of just how Santa manages to make his journey. You can track St. Nick's progress on Google Maps' Santa Tracker, and in 2016, The Mirror did an intensive study of the statistics of Santa's magical journey on Christmas Eve. They discovered that in order for him to deliver presents to every single child in the world on a single night, he would need to travel at speeds of 1,280 miles per second.
Well, now we've all learned a very interesting history, a lot of interesting factoids about Christmas, and a little bit more of a general understanding of the whole holiday period of time and how we have sort of gotten to the place we're at with things developing over time with writers and poets and stories and myths and even geographic movements of how this went from the original starts in the Turkey area to northern England, Northern Europe, and then to the Americas, and how all this has developed over time. So let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll come back. And this time, we might want to talk about some of the real controversies around Santa Claus, not just the myth. So please join us for the next segment. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
If you want the truth about politics, medicine, weapons, classic cars, and more, you'll want to tune in to America's Web Radio. You can listen to all of your favorite shows live at www.americaswebradio.com or on demand on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. That's www.americaswebradio.com.
What will Victor say next?
Find out every Tuesday at 1 p.m. on the On Point with Victor show, only on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio. This is Ron Bachman, and we're continuing in this third segment on the pageantry, the experience around Christmas and the celebration of the birth of Jesus with sort of modern day recognition of love and joy and children and gift giving and fantasies and all the things that some people say creates a commercialization of Christmas rather than recognizing the religious holidays. But there doesn't have to be that break between the two. But Christmas has certainly got some controversy, as does Santa Claus, that many people would point to as the reason for that kind of commercialization. But as we've learned already, the Santa Claus is about giving and loving and recognizing the needs of children and the poor and those infirmed and in need of various gifts and the generosity of neighbors. So let's talk for a moment about the controversy that surrounds Santa Claus, as well as all the wonder and joy and appreciation for what he does. So let's hear a little bit about the controversy and where that has taken some people in their mind to dismiss Christmas, to dislike the Christmas time period of time because they don't think it's really about the birth of Jesus.
Even though the world loves Santa Claus, that doesn't mean his legacy has been free from controversy. Indeed, he is often blamed for being at the root of making the holiday season about material things rather than having young people remember the true meaning of Christmas. Commercialism is a very real thing, of course, and there is no denying that Santa Claus has helped sell billions of dollars in products every holiday season, from Coca-Cola to Barbie dolls. But in a world where religion and politics divide so many people, there are very few things that Americans agree on quite like the tradition of Santa Claus. Every December the 24th, children go to bed and they wake up at the crack of dawn, hoping they will find presents underneath their Christmas tree. For many, it's one of the very few memories we all share of having faith in something and the experience of childhood wonder and the belief in magic.
Speaking of children's beliefs, there is a story that most of us know the background of, but I'd like to hear a little bit more of the details of where it started and when all this occurred, because it seems as though we never really think about history and when things started and how it's influenced us in our today's thinking. But one of the stories that many people have heard is about a little girl named Virginia who asked the question, is Santa Claus real? And give us a little bit of the background of that particular story, because I think it's fascinating and is interesting to any parent who gets asked by their 8, 9, 10-year-old child, is Santa Claus real or not?
If you still aren't convinced in the existence of Santa Claus, there are few words that can better express the truth than those of Francis Fassalis Church. In 1897, an 8-year-old girl named Virginia O'Hanlon wrote to the New York Sun saying that her friends in school told her that Santa Claus was not real. She asked the church to tell her the truth, and they published this reply. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as sure as generosity and devotion exists, and you know they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary the world would be without a Santa Claus. I want to say that Santa Claus does exist as long as he's in our hearts.
Well, let's go to another expert on Christmas and Santa Claus, and let's go through a number of critical points to sort of emphasize what we've already learned and to expand on it a little bit. In particular, let's go back and let's talk about the Santa Claus name that is used around the world and what other countries and how is it used and what do children wake up on Christmas morning having expected whoever it is to have brought them presents or gifts and by what name do they call him?
The one you know as Santa Claus has different nicknames around the world. In Belgium and France, he's called Père Noël. In Italy, Babbo Natale. For the Netherlands, Kerstman. And for Finland, Joulupukki. Japanese people know him as Hoteosho, a god or priest who bears gifts. While in Sweden, he has the name of Jultomten, translated as Christmas Brownie. Hungary, Poland, and Russia are a bit more classic, telling stories about Mikulas, Sveti Nikolai and Ded Moroz, translated as Saint Nicholas and Grandfather Frost. In China, Dan Chelao Ren, Christmas Old Man, is the one who gives gifts, while folks in the UK wait for Father Christmas.
You know, our listeners out there, including myself, are very American-centric, very North American-centric, very United States-centric, and we forget that the rest of the world may be celebrating the same thing we are, but they're using different terms, different terminology, a little different history and background with their writers and their poets and their singers created around the whole Christmas experience. Let's talk now about this location in the North Pole. Is that the same around the world? Give us a little explanation about how Santa's workshop is perceived in other countries.
Santa's house. If that trip we mentioned earlier happens to be in a Nordic country, you're in luck. Each of them claims to shelter Santa's residence, and most of them have one you can visit. In Norway, it's said that Santa lives in Drobak, while Denmark claims he lives in Greenland. In Stockholm, Sweden, the National Postal Terminal receives children's letters for Santa, and in the town of Mora, there is a theme park named Tomteland. Korvantunturi, Finland has a history of being known as Santa's home, with its two theme parks, Santa Claus Village and Santa Park, while Ded Moroz, that's the name for Santa Claus, remember, has his residence in Belarus, in the Belarusian Forest National Park. Santa also has a whole town to himself, Santa Claus, Indiana, known for his many themed attractions such as Santa's Candy Castle and the Lake Rudolph Campground.
So, audience, I hope you're starting to see that the wonders and joy and the spirit of giving and the recognition of the birth of Jesus Christ through this Santa Claus and Christmas experience can be the same throughout the world in terms of the spirit, but the actual mystery, the history, the stories, the locations, the descriptions can be very different to create the same kind of spiritual imagery around Santa Claus. What about the food that's left? You know, we think of in the United States that we leave cookies and milk because some of the songs and some of the stories that we've heard. But what is it like around the rest of the world? What kind of foods that they leave Santa Claus in other countries?
What kinds of food do people leave for Santa? All good kids leave milk and cookies under the Christmas tree in order to make Santa leave some extra gifts. But where did this tradition start? Well, there are a lot of combined sources for it, but one is related to the Great Depression, where the parents tried to teach their children to share food with the others during Christmas time. Also, Dutch children started to leave food and drink for St. Nicholas on his feast day. People around the world leave all sorts of food and drinks for Santa, like rice porridge with cinnamon sugar in Denmark, Norway, and Sweden, while mince pies and Christmas pudding paired with a beer or sherry are more popular in Britain, Ireland, and Australia.
You know, there's something else we take for granted about Santa, and that is his red clothing and his red hat with the white bordering, that sort of a furry look that offsets the bright red color. Where does that come from, and is that universal as well? What happens in other countries?
Until 1931, Santa dressed in whatever colors he wanted, usually blue, green, or brown. But in 1931, Coca-Cola issued a massive ad campaign in which Santa wore Coke's red and white colors, and it became so prevalent that Santa never had to worry about what to wear ever again. Pepsi launched a similar campaign in 2004, attempting to dress Santa in blue and white, their brand's colors, but it didn't catch. However, historians argue that the red and white color dates back to the 19th century and comes from St. Nicholas. But no matter where the truth lies, nowadays the red color is everywhere around Christmas, and it's not going anywhere anytime soon.
You know, in one of the previous segments of this program, we briefly and only briefly talked about Mrs. Claus coming into the scene. Let's get a little bit more background and history on Mrs. Santa Claus.
Mrs. Claus and the end of Santa's bachelorhood. Santa was, for a long time, a bachelor who worked with his elves and reindeer and gave gifts to the kids on the nice list. That was until 1849, when James Rees wrote a short story named A Christmas Legend, where a spouse, Mrs. Claus, was mentioned for the first time. After that, she began to appear even more under the names of Merry Christmas, Gertrude, Carol, Layla, Martha, or Jessica, being known for making cookies with elves, helping her husband with toys, and caring for the reindeer.
Well, as we're all learning, there are different traditions around Christmas and Santa Claus across countries, but there's also been a dramatic difference, as we've seen throughout this presentation today, differences over time. What about the image we have of Santa Claus being this rotund, very large individual with a long beard? What has been the history of how he looks? Has that changed over time?
The appearance of Santa also changes over time, and it was Coca-Cola who introduced him as the rotund, jolly, white-haired man we're all familiar with today.
I would only add that before the Coca-Cola ad that depicted a visual of Santa Claus in their ads being a large individual, that the poem, "'Twas the Night Before Christmas," also talked about Santa Claus as laughing like a bowl full of jelly. So that image was also painted in the mind from the poem. Now, what other differences should we look at that change across time or across countries?
Santa is known for having his sleigh drawn by reindeer, but do you know how many? It all started with a single reindeer, illustrated in a children's poem back in 1821. Then, in 1823, when the poem A Visit from St. Nicholas was published, another 7 reindeer joined in with the first one. The names of the 8 reindeer are Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Donner, and Blitzen. Rudolph only started to pull Santa's sleigh in 1939, when the song Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was written. The 10th reindeer, however, is known as either Olive, Bruno the Brown-Nosed Reindeer, or Howard. The most popular one is Olive, the other reindeer, who mocked Rudolph because of his red nose, but eventually became really good friends with him and joined Santa's team.
Well, I don't know about everybody else in the audience out there, but for me personally, doing this research and presenting this information, it's a fascinating look into little factoids around Christmas and about where we are. Maybe just because I'm in my older years, I like to look back in history and see from where we came and how our current traditions were actually developed over time, and how interesting it is that certain individual events, whether it's a poem or a song or a politician, has such a big impact on what our holidays look like, what our thoughts are and how they're molded, and how we create some common interests. So I hope all of this also reinforces the idea that what we really want to celebrate at Christmas is the birth of Jesus, but the idea of love and giving and neighborly love your neighbors is all about what Santa is really presenting to all of us. It's not just about commercialization or buying gifts or being greedy about what you want, putting together your Christmas list, but it's about connecting with other family members and other neighbors and being good stewards of whatever resources you have to help others. Let's take a commercial break, and we'll be back for some more interesting insights into the background and history and myths of Christmas that every parent should really know about.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
Veteran-owned, America's Web Radio would like to thank all of our incredible patrons. We wouldn't be able to do this without you. If you are not already a patron, you can help us continue to produce some of the most informative and entertaining shows on the internet by becoming a patron. patrons of America's Web Radio are the first to receive information about new shows and links to the latest podcast episodes. Join now and receive a free gift while supplies last. For more information and to join our family, please visit www.patreon.com/AmericasWebRadio. If you have questions, contact us at gm@AmericasWebRadio.com. And as always, thank you for listening.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio. Today we are enjoying some of the factoids of the history of Santa Claus and elves and reindeer, and it's really what every parent should know about the background of how we experience and celebrate the holiday season. So I hope if you're listening into this program or you're listening to it at any other time of the year, it's being recorded right now during the holiday season. But regardless, there's a whole background and experience about how we got where we are, how we experienced Christmases or as children, and how our children and grandchildren are experiencing Christmas and where this all came from. Yes, the core is the birth of Jesus Christ and our celebration. And many think that the giving is coming from the Magi who gave Jesus gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh at his birth. But there's really a much broader story and picture and understanding so that we can continue, if you will, the fantasies of youth, the fantasies of joy and giving and love and sharing. All that goes along with the Christian religion principles of love and joy and giving and love thy neighbor and focus on the family. All those things are appropriate from a religious standpoint, and we're really celebrating that, even though at times we may get sidetracked into thinking that it's all about presents and the commercialization and the product development and advertising that goes on during this period of time. But it's really much broader than that, much deeper. And I think if we know and understand more of these background stories and expansions of the myths of Christmas around songs and poems and stories and books and all those things that have created sort of a common understanding and a common exposure to the Christmas spirit, it helps unite us all so that we are all, regardless of what race or creed or color or even generation, that we can experience back and forth the same sort of joys of Christmas. So let's go back to some of the interesting little factoids that we've been discovering, and let's talk about the elves that Santa works with at his workshop up in the North Pole. Has it always been just an unknown name of elves, a grouping of elves that sort of work on these issues? We heard that came about later on. It used to be just Santa. Now he's got a whole team of elves. But even on the elves, do they have names? How many of them are there? And what is the history and recognition of that across different parts of the world? So let's get into that right now.
We're all familiar with Santa's army of little guys with pointy ears, who wear red and green clothes and funny hats, also known as elves. But did you know that at first there were only six of them? Their names are Alabaster Snowball, Bushy Evergreen, Peppermint Sticks, Shinny Up a Tree, Sugar Plum Mary, and Vunrose Open Sleigh. And they were engineers, inventors, cooks, craftsmen, and guardians. But there's another name for them in Nordic European countries, and that is Nisi, and they have the appearance similar to that of a garden gnome. The image of Santa surrounded by elves in the workshop was popularized by Godey's Ladybook, with a front cover illustration for its 1873 Christmas issue, showing Santa surrounded by toys and elves.
There are so many fascinating differences between the experience and the celebration of Christmas and the recognition of Santa and everything that surrounds him to create that whole image of gift giving by Santa and the elves and the reindeer and all that. What about around the world? Is everybody get gifts at the same time? Is it on December 25th? How does that function around the world in terms of the common day of Christmas.
Well, most people celebrate Christmas on December 25th. That isn't the only day when people give and receive gifts in wintertime. There's also St. Nicholas's Day, which is celebrated on December 6th in Western Christian countries, December 5th in the Netherlands, and December 9th in Eastern Christian countries. People exchange gifts or surprise the children with sweets while Santa is preparing thoroughly for his night shift on December 24th.
We've heard several times from the experts that we've been discussing Santa Claus with that, especially with this audience being probably a large part in Atlanta and America's Web Radio being located in Atlanta, we like to think of the Coca-Cola as having taken the lead in producing this image of Santa with the white beard and the rotund belly and white furry trimmed on his clothes and on his hat. But is that really the first use of Santa to even promote beverages?
Yes, Coca-Cola gave Santa a makeover and helped him stay in people's minds as the nice old man with a long white beard who wears a red coat and hat and black belt and boots. But they weren't the first ones to use this image in advertising. White Rock Beverages was the first soft drink company to utilize Santa back in 1915 to sell mineral water, and then for its ginger ale in 1923. In 1919, Santa Claus was even featured in a cigarette ad for the Turkish brand Murad. The ad claimed that Murad cigarettes are what the grown-ups choose for Christmas.
We heard earlier about how Martin Luther during the Reformation thought that St. Nicholas and the whole Christmas experience of gift giving was a Catholic experience, a Catholic holiday, and Martin Luther wanted to break away from what he saw as a corrupt Catholic hierarchy. Tell us a little bit more about this idea of banning Christmas and how that all transpired and maybe how it changed over time, because obviously Christmas is not banned. It's one of the most revered holidays for the kind of gift giving and images of Santa Claus that we've been talking around here all this whole hour. So tell us about the banning of Christmas in some locations and how that all worked out or didn't work out, as the case may be.
In 1655, Christmas was removed as a national holiday by the Puritans in the English Parliament, and from 1659, when pioneers settled in New England, until 1870, when President Ulysses S. Grant recognized Christmas as an official American holiday, American citizens could have been penalized if they celebrated Christmas or anything related to Santa Claus. And this isn't the only case like this in the world. In the Soviet Union, after the Russian Revolution, celebrating Christmas was forbidden. However, in the 1930s, Joseph Stalin brought back a blue coat wearing guy who gave gifts to people on the night of New Year's, known as Grandfather Frost.
Well, I hope our audience is enjoying the factoids and the background and the explanation of some of the little things that we enjoy about Christmas and some of the activities that occur during Christmas time, where they came from, how they developed, who sponsored them, how it grew into what it is today in the terms of our Christmas celebrations. One of the areas that's of interest is this idea of keeping a list, a good list and a naughty list. Where did that come from, and does that change in different parts of the world?
When we were little, we all hoped we were on Santa's nice list so we could get the gifts we wished for. But did you know that this list has its roots in the cultures of Belgium and the Netherlands? The Norse god Odin is Santa's Germanic precursor, and he kept two ravens, with which he would use to keep tabs on who was good or bad, since they would sit atop people's chimneys and eavesdrop on their conversations. Odin also resembles Santa, since he sported a white beard and a blue hooded cloak. Kids would leave food for him, and in return, he would leave them treats and candies.
Well, as we move to wrap up this hour, explaining all the details and backgrounds and all the parts of Santa Claus and Christmas and the way he delivers presents and how it's all made, let's go back one more time to the actual Santa Claus itself and give a brief summary of how we got to where we are with the term Santa Claus.
St. Nicholas was actually known as Sinterklaas in a Dutch tradition, which said he was a bishop who traveled on the night of December 5th from house to house to deliver treats to children. The name of Santa Claus had first appeared in a story that was published in a New York City newspaper back in 1773, which is just a little bit over 200 years ago. You're still pretty young there, Santa.
So as we wrap up here with a little bit of a summary, can you go back and connect, if you will, Washington Irving, one of the great writers, how he created and how he linked some of the magic of Santa Claus to some of his other stories like the Headless Horseman?
What do Santa Claus and the Headless Horseman have in common? Well, you know how Santa delivers the gifts with his reindeer-drawn sleigh? That sleigh is actually credited to the creator of the Headless Horseman, Washington Irving. Santa's sleigh made its first appearance in 1819 in Irving's short stories collection, The Sketchbook of Geoffrey Crayon. The author also inspired Charles Dickens to write A Christmas Carol, and he was the one to spread the idea that Santa slides down chimneys to deliver presents.
And finally, we see Santa Clauses every place, every mall, every store, all around the country, all around the world. There are different Santa Clauses, but they still make themselves available in the public at shopping centers around the world to have children stand in line to get their picture with Santa Claus and to tell Santa Claus what it is that they want on their list for Christmas. How does that work? And obviously, these are Santa's helpers that are out there that are in a Santa Claus outfit for the children. But is there some training that goes on? Is there a school for Santa Claus? Tell us a little bit about that background of how we are able to promote so many Santas in so many different places around the country and around the world.
There's a Santa Claus University where people learn professional Santa Claus skills like poses, toy knowledge, beard styling, and how to avoid a lawsuit. And what's great for those who actually pursue this Christmassy career is they can earn up to $100,000 a year. Now, any guys out there want to be Santa when they grow up?
Let me wrap up this hour of learning about all the wonderful details and history and background and factoids about Santa Claus and give you a personal experience as a youth, both as a joy and some of the disappointment of Christmas. I remember one of my earliest was when I was sitting on Santa's lap in probably Macy's New York department store, and I still firmly believed in Santa, and I asked Santa for some gifts that I was hoping to get, and he said that he would stop by my house, pick me up, and take me around the world in his sleigh. So I fully expected that he would not lie to me, but when I woke up on Christmas morning, I guess I had slept through his invitation because I never saw Santa and I never made that ride that I had so hoped for. So I was somewhat disappointed. Now, let me tell you about the goodest and best part of Christmas that I experienced. And that is, as a youth, hunting in Pennsylvania was a big deal. So when I got my first gun at age of 12, it was one of the most wonderful Christmases I can remember of having a 16-gauge shotgun, which sort of marked my movement from being a boy to a man, was one of the rituals, if you will, of a youth in Pennsylvania. And it was something I forever remember having a Christmas along with the Christmas tree, the trains under the Christmas tree that my dad would put together, the toys we would get. But of all the different toys and gifts, I guess it was both a holster with guns when I was probably 7 or 8 years old, and the shotgun I got at age 12 to let me go out deer hunting with my dad. So I hope you enjoyed this. I hope you enjoyed all these little backgrounds and issues during this holiday season. I think it's something every parent should know, some of this detail and background and history. So join us again next week on America's Web Radio and Healthcare Insight for topics that you'll find enjoyable and surprising. That's coming out of Healthcare Insight, because it's not really healthcare except healthcare of the country, domestically, foreign policy-wise, and anything else that we find might be of interest to the listeners out there. Have a good holiday and a Merry Christmas.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.